Rx is supported by Margaretville Hospital, a member of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, a critical access hospital offering comprehensive medical services, including emergency, cardiology, imaging, rehab, and a retail pharmacy. 845-586-1800. WIOX is supported by Roxbury Wine and Spirits on Main Street in Roxbury. Open every day except Sunday from 12 noon to 6 p.m. for contactless curbside pickup or delivery to your open vehicle trunk or hatchback. Selection of wines listed at RoxburyWineAndSpirits.com. Orders by phone or email 607-326-6200. Or Jeff at RoxburyWineAndSpirit.com. WIOX is supported by the Andes Hotel, Restaurant, and Bar. Open Tuesday through Sunday for indoor dining or heated outdoor dining on the porch. Southern Cooking on Tuesdays, Wings on Wednesdays, Surf and Turf on Friday. Menus and reservations, TheAndesHotel.com or 845-676-4408. 845-676-4408.
Hi, this is Carol Seitz, host of The Rabbit Hole, Monday mornings at 10 on WIOX Roxbury, live and local in New York's Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, WIOXradio.org, and MTC Cable Channel 20.
You are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. And this is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Oh, things are good.
Yeah?
Yeah, how are you, Ryan?
Okay, burning a lot of firewood. Temperatures are, I don't know, they're getting cold. This is a true winter. Mr. Gary Mead's been on in the past, and he's talked about how last fall was a real fall and spring and summer. Well, this winter, if you like winter, which I don't mind winter, this is a real winter.
I don't mind at all. I was just telling you off the air, though, I like to go for walks in the winter, especially to look at tracks. I don't know, something I've liked to do when I was a little kid, even. And it's getting to the point now that I don't even want to go out and do that because the snow's a little deep.
Yeah, it's deep. There's some snow out there. I wonder how much is on some of the high peaks above, 3,500 feet to 4,000.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't know. I'd like to find out from somebody who maybe hiked earlier, but I wonder if that original snowfall from November didn't fully leave above 4,000 feet.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if we didn't lose that Christmas Eve snow.
Oh, there'd be almost 3 to 4 feet out there over the woods.
Yeah, definitely. So, it's February, and the last several years, I have tapped my maple trees for making maple syrup in January. And sometimes I've even been done by February, beginning of February even. That's not going to happen this year. I live at 900 feet. Roxbury, we're around 1,400 feet here. Margaretville, about the same, a little lower. And, you know, typically end of February, early March is kind of what? In the last few years, Mike, when have you tapped?
Mid-February.
Yeah. This year, I think we're a solid March, maybe.
It's going to be close, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's real close. So yeah, I'm getting my sap from 2,200 feet this year, too, so I might not be getting it until mid-March.
Especially on what side of the mountain you're on. But that's Mike Porter. He's the president with the Catskill Forest Association. We're going to talk about backyard maple sugaring. How's it going, Mike?
Good. Real good.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
Trying to stay warm, but getting out and doing some work in the barn, like a little woodworking, getting ready for some different projects that I have to wait on because I need some warmth. But I'm getting ready, doing the groundwork.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not bad.
And shoveling some snow. I have a snow blower and a tractor.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah. I know John and I have been pruning a lot of apple trees every day, and some places have more snow than others, but all pretty much have a lot of snow now, over 2 feet, I'd say, everywhere.
It's getting to be above our boot gaiters, and that's a little annoying because you get wet knees all day.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, the last 2 years, because we pruned a lot the last 2 years, were about 36 degrees and raining most days or wet. So, I don't know. This isn't too bad.
No,
I'll take it.
Be so bad.
Dry snow is much better than rain, I think. But what do you think, John?
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, once you get soaked, especially in the morning, you can't have enough layers on.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, let's talk about some maple syrup.
I want to interject something first. I'd like to take a minute. I'm president of the board of directors at Catskill Forest Association, and John and Ryan are two-thirds of the field staff, but they're 100% of the radio show staff. And a month ago, CFA was awarded a certificate of excellence from the New York State Society of American Foresters for quality communication in forestry. And I just want to take this minute. You can applaud for them if you want, but John and Ryan do an amazing job with this show, and I'm honored to be on it. I'm honored to be associated with these guys. If you see them on the street, congratulate them, because this was a big-time deal. And indications are it's going to be put up for a national award. So now those are things to think about. All right, thanks,
national
guys.
National award. Where did you hear that, Mike?
They were talking about it at the meeting that you had to babysit for.
Yeah.
John might have heard it.
Jeez. Well, in any case, it's fun for us. You get to reach out to people who make a living from the forest, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so. And I mean, it's a lot of fun. Some of the guests that we have on, we get to hear them even on other national platforms and podcasts, and it's pretty cool that we get to be a part of that.
Yeah, not bad. So let's talk about maple syrup, you know?
All right, I got past my PSA.
No, that's good. Thanks, yeah, Mike. Appreciate
you're
it.
You're welcome.
So first of all, what got you into making maple syrup? Why do you do it? Why?
Well,
can't you just buy it at the store, Mike?
My reasoning has evolved from when I was a little kid. We would make it because our neighbor lady made it, and she would work on a little pan in the backyard, and we'd pick up sticks for her. That was our. I guess she got the lawn all cleaned up from all the trees, and as I grew older and became more involved in the appreciation of what's out there, I do it because, first, I love maple syrup, even though I don't eat a lot, but it's the tradition. It's one of the things that our forefathers around here did, though they made it to hard sugar. They did it because it was a staple for life. And people understanding the process and giving themselves an opportunity to try it, even if you just tap one bucket, I mean, just the magic of that stuff thickening up and turning into maple syrup. And in the old days, they sold maple sugar. They didn't can it. They took it right to sugar and stored it because storage was a problem. But it's just an amazing tradition, and I love to keep it going.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, last week we had, John Cox from Quercus Cooperage. He makes whiskey barrels. Talk about an old art, you know, but
yeah. Oh, he was an impressive speaker. I really, really enjoyed him.
Yeah, to make something from start to finish is more difficult today.
Yeah.
There's a lot more division of labor, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it is cool to make some things from start to finish, like firewood or a whiskey barrel, or if you're sawing up a tree into lumber or maple syrup.
Yep.
And that's pretty cool, I think.
There's a certain level of satisfaction in knowing that Mother Nature does provide, and that you know how to get from Mother Nature what she provides.
My kids were screaming at Mother Nature last night. Now you bring that up.
Uh-oh.
As they're shoveling snow. Thanks a lot, Mother Nature.
Yeah. Yeah, well, whatever. It happens.
Yeah. But, hey, the sap you can drink, too. My kids ask me about if any sap, do you have any sap? I said, it has to be warm. There's no sap. I tapped one tree out in the back just for that purpose and to use it as a barometer of when the other trees might be running. And a few days back it ran. But just drinking it, using it in your coffee or tea.
Yeah.
It's the new coconut water. I think it tastes a lot better than coconut water.
Becky uses the sap, actually, to make her coffee.
Yeah.
She'll go out and grab the bucket and brew her coffee in it. And I don't drink coffee, so I don't know what it tastes like, but she said it's very special.
It's better. When I used to do that, I haven't done it because I don't want to ruin my coffee machine. I don't think it would take it as good. I think you need a pot one, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's perfectly diluted, the sap, with 2% or more or less sugar. So, whereas when you put maple syrup into it, it never seems to mix in well into the water, into your coffee, I don't think, as well as when it's sap. So it does work, I think, good for that. I don't know.
Yeah, and you can have it. It's refined and pasteurized and bottled. I went to a Cornell forest a while back, and they had soda bottles full of sap.
Yeah.
And it's not – all they do is purify it and pasteurize it so that it doesn't spoil and sell it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Pretty amazing.
I like it. But is this worth doing? Why do you think it's worth for some people to do?
$40 a gallon.
Yeah.
$20, more than 40 a gallon. $20 a quart.
Yeah.
For syrup. It's worth it.
Yeah.
Just give it a try.
Sure.
Yeah.
And John, what are you doing this season with maple sugaring?
Well, I got a new evaporator this season. Not new, brand new, but new to me. And it's small. It's still the backyard scale, but that's what I want. It's what I decided I'm going for now. 18 inches by 4 feet. So same surface area as yours, Ryan. 2x3 is the same surface area as that.
I thought that was a 2x4.
No, it's 18 by 4.
Oh, right.
18 inches by 4.
Huh.
Yeah, so we'll see. This weekend, I think, is going to be the big weekend to get it all set up, ready to go. I'm not going to fully set up the sugar house like I want it this year. I actually have to modify the roof a little more than what I thought I needed to do. So anyway, that requires a digging project when the ground isn't frozen. So I'm going to just set up the sugar house with a kind of a makeshift operation this year, and next year be full swing, but I'm still going to be able to make my 5 gallons or so.
Yeah. All right, so someone wants to do this. What do they need first?
First thing you need is access to maple trees. Pretty much, if you know what a maple leaf looks like, pretty much any tree that has a maple leaf on it will make maple syrup in one form or another.
Yeah.
I personally hold to sugar maple producing the best maple syrup. Red maple is pretty common around here, and a lot of people use that. In fact, I'm going to be boiling some of that this year.
Yeah.
Only because I'm helping out a friend, and he has sap, and he wants it boiled, and I have the time. So I'm going to push my 2x4 evaporator to the limit this year.
And do you think there's differences between a commercial scale, meaning, you're getting above 100, 200, 1,000, 5,000 taps, and someone just wants to you know, make anywhere from a quart to 20 gallons? I mean, is there you're looking for different kind of trees, is what I'm saying.
If you're looking to make it on a real small scale, it means you don't have the high-tech boiling equipment. You might better go with the sweetest trees, which are the sugar maples.
Yeah.
That's my feeling. And I stick 100% to sugar maples when I'm doing my own normal operation. And last year I did 55 taps, made 14 gallons of syrup. This year, and it's going to be an interesting concept, I'm going to be using about 1,000 taps that's RO'd, reverse osmosis, which is a process where you filter the sap and you remove pure water and leave the sugar water behind. And it'll go from 1.5% to 12% sugar.
So that's 50 to 1 to...
50 to 1 to 10 to 1, 8 to 1. Yeah. And they claim that the 2x4 evaporator will do that. So I'll let you know at the end of the season.
So you have a, I mean, you've been tasting the same maple syrup, you know, more or less for a long time, decades. So yeah, this year you'll be able to see if there actually is a difference between reverse osmosis and bucket. Yeah.
And my wife thinks there is. That and filter pressing the syrup at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I don't really know.
Yeah.
I think it has a lot to do with cleanliness and a lot of things, actually.
Yeah, and the speed at which you produce sugar or syrup from the sap.
But as we learned when we went to Verona, that maple conference years back, the guy from Canada came down and spoke. And some people that rare are too clean, and they don't have enough of the glucose. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah,
because it's mainly sucrose, and as there's more of, you know, microorganisms in there, there's more glucose, and then if there's a lot, there's fructose.
Yeah.
But some guys were so clean that it didn't taste like anything.
Yeah.
And then some people were so dirty that it was not good, you know, burnt kind of whatever you want to call it.
Burnt umber or something.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But that, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, well, some of these big commercial operations, I mean, they have these reverse osmosis machines that are getting, like you just said, Mike, up to super high sugar content. And the evaporating is so efficient that it might go through a preheater or a steam away, something like that, that removes a third more water before it even comes to a boil. So the sap itself is only in the evaporator for minutes before it reaches the end product versus something like ours. Yeah. You know, it could be hours before we reach our end product. So the boiling time has a lot to do with it. And like you said, the cleanliness. So it all adds up and... Yeah, there's a lot of debate on the flavor.
I mean, the cooking process does bring out flavor. It's just a matter of how much, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think.
Yeah, like the longer you boil it, the more it caramelizes.
Yeah.
And the caramelizing is the color. I very rarely make anything that's any better than medium. And if I do, it might be once.
Yeah.
And then I get into dark and extra dark. But Shaver Hill and Stamford or Harpersfield, they have an evaporator. They use reverse osmosis, steam away, and they make 40 or 50 gallons of syrup an hour.
Yeah.
And I look at that and I say, holy cow, I make that in the season if I have a majorly good season. You know, when I used to do 100 taps, I could make 40 gallons periodically, and that's a lot of syrup.
Well, the guy in Grahamsville, Grigliano, Catskill Mountain Sugar House, 10 years back, claimed he made 96 gallons in an hour.
That's just nuts.
96.
That's nuts.
He had at least 30,000 taps or something back then. I don't know what he has now.
Yeah. Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, up north, that's typical in Canada to have 40,000 plus. But what I didn't realize is, they're mainly soft or red maple that they're tapping. And the guy from Quebec, he laughed at us because he couldn't believe the quality of sugar maple. So a lot of people may not know this, and I've said it before on the show, and Cornell has done the study and the inventories. New York State, not Vermont, has the most potential taps of maple trees in the Union. And Delaware County has the most in New York State. And that's private land. That's not like counting the forest preserve.
That's not even counting the forest preserve.
Yeah, if we could tap the forest preserve, it would be even different. But, that's pretty amazing. And it's just a perfect site out there, Delaware County and parts of Ulster and Sullivan. You know, you have well-drained, calcium-rich soils.
Yep.
It's pretty much the whole area.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
So why was the guy from Quebec laughing? Was he laughing that we were tapping our sawlog quality sugar maple?
He was laughing at that we only tapped 1% of our potential.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And Vermont was like 3%, 3-7, I don't remember, and they were much higher. They have different laws in Canada where they almost – it sounded like they almost forced people to tap. Like someone could come on your land and tap your trees. Private rights a little different there.
Okay.
I don't remember. That could be wrong. What I do know is they price fix. They literally have a ministry that fixes the price of maple syrup. So the reason why you're paying so much, though, Mike, for that is because Canada literally price fixes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not like what I think. That's just a fact. They stockpile it. Remember that heist?
Yeah.
They knew where it was because they're fixing the price.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's true because I was selling sap for a long time out of a 1,000-tap sugar bush, and I wouldn't get paid to the end of the year because it was based on the price per pound that year of syrup, and we wouldn't know the price per pound until Canada's market had made their syrup, and their season was the last season.
Yeah.
So because they were fixing the world market, just because their volume's so rich, they are the world market, and I wouldn't know how much I made until April or May.
To me, it's not fair to the United States. I mean, I don't know. That's one of those trade things that should be worked out. I mean, if you did that with timber, it would be terrible.
Yeah.
If you did it with any other product, dairy, whatever, maybe they do with dairy. I have no idea. But, geez. You know, so that is one thing. I guess it's nice to be paid more if you're a maple producer, but the consumer is definitely losing out. And sugar is much cheaper. So could be even hurting. I don't know. Maybe more trees would be tapped if it was more competitive with sugar cane. I don't know.
I think if there were people willing to – how am I going to say this? If there was enough money in retail – retail's tough. You have to work really hard to sell syrup retail.
Yeah.
Most people are selling bulk. I've taken loads for Jody to Tom Kaufman, and it's been barrels full of syrup.
Right.
And if you could – he would double or triple his money if he could – develop a retail market
or value-added stuff.
Yeah But for somebody like him who's working a full-time job, the retail would really make a difference to him. But you don't get the money right away, and you're not going to be stuck with something at the end of the season. So I think more people would do it if retail was easier, but retail's not easy for anything.
You need more people involved. It's kind of like, you know, growing up in New Paltz, you saw a lot of the orchards going to value-added, and it was a family affair. Like, they would have someone doing the orchard, but then their farm stands started to evolve into bakeries, and now a lot of them, some of them that I know, make more money in their bakery and the farm stand than they do on other things. That's become a thing.
Yeah.
You could see that happening with maple sugaring, but you need a family to kind of do that. You know, you need one person to make the stuff and then another person to kind of, like, sell it.
Right.
That's a different thing.
It's
a different person.
And it's, there's a lot of difference and a lot of specialized abilities.
Yeah.
You got to sniff out a market, and you got to get the syrup there at the appropriate time. And if it's a farmer's market, you got to go every week.
Yeah.
You can't just go once and say, there, I made my money.
Right.
Because you've got to do it over and over again.
Yeah. Sure, absolutely. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is backyard maple sugaring with Mike Porter. So, all right, we need maple trees. Then what?
What trees, though? We didn't really get that fully. I mean, yeah, sugar maple, but if you're the backyard scale, there's certain trees that are better than others for sure. I think all of us would suggest to get out of the forest if you're going to be tapping on a backyard scale, if you're only tapping 1 to 20 trees. Really micro select those trees. They got to be the healthy, big crown, open, sunny, pasture trees or roadside or yard trees. A tree in the forest isn't going to produce the same sugar for you. It's going to be lower sugar content always, and that big tree is going to have more sap typically.
Well, when I tapped at Frost Valley, and when I used to work there in 2006, the trees in the forest were 50-1. And that was typically, the other guy said that's what they had. It was 50-1 or 1.5%.
Yeah.
So when the yard maples I tap now, which I've selected now over the years and gotten to know which ones are the best, are typically 2.5%. I think that's 33-1. Could be 27 or 33. I might be messing up. Yeah, that's a big difference.
That is a big difference.
Yeah.
Well, the last couple of years when I've downsized, I used to collect everything in a big tank. I have 100 taps, and I'd collect it in a tank and take it home and then boil it from the tank. Now I have few enough that I gather in milk cans, and I have a spot where I tap on the hillside just to get some bulk. And I test the sap in each milk can, and I know the ones that are along the street, and I know the ones that are in the woods, because there's a difference sometimes of a whole percent. In fact, I have one tree in the front yard 2 years ago that was 4%.
Yeah.
I'd never tapped it before, and it was 4%. And that spring, it was absolutely loaded with seeds. So it was prepping for something when it was that high sugar. Yeah. It knew something was coming, and it was the most seeds I've ever seen on a tree.
Yeah. So something to that, maybe, huh?
Yeah.
Well, it takes carbohydrates to make seeds.
Yeah, and you gotta have the carbohydrates available.
Yeah. So the reason why they have higher sugar contents typically is because bigger crown, more sunlight during the summer. So it's really about the summer is when your high octane sap is being made.
Yeah, and I'm thinking this year, and I don't have any proof of it yet because nothing's thawed, but I think this year sugar content's going to be up pretty good because there were a lot of leaves last year, and they stayed on a long time.
Yeah.
And they were big and healthy. Some years you get defoliation or insect problems other than defoliation, and that creates a problem. But this past summer, they just grew like crazy.
Yeah, but those leaves didn't pop until Memorial Day weekend.
But that was, that's only a couple. To be honest, in Margaretville, Memorial Day's kind of, it's plus or minus,
yeah,
I find.
The leaves are coming on in the village on a regular basis in mid-May. They're starting to come out. You can stand in my yard and look at trees on the street and their leaves, and you look across at Pakatakin, and halfway up, it's still winter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm in a spot, I kind of am like you, except I'm not in the tropics of, I'm the tropics of Delaware County.
Yeah.
I get my sugars a little earlier than somebody else's, and the trees leaf earlier.
Yeah,
and so on. Yeah,
and that matters. I would recommend people tap the southern facing side.
Yeah,
if you can.
If you tap the north facing side, it stays cold longer.
Yeah,
and actually, it used to be people when they first started doing pipeline, they just run their taps kind of in series along the line, and on the sunny side of the tree, it would spit sap out, and on the dark side of the tree, it was still frozen, and there was a negative pressure inside the tree, it would suck it right in. So they were losing stuff. That's when they started putting drops on the lines to get it out. And with buckets, you don't have that. Once that drop hits the air, it's not going back in the tree.
Right.
So, there's just all sorts of adjustments that have been made over the years to the process.
Buckets versus tubing? I mean, what do you think?
Well, if you're doing yard trees, if you're doing street trees, buckets are easier because you're not going to be doing an awful lot of them. And I use a milk can to gather, so I just wheel my milk can around and collect that way. And if you had pipeline, you'd have to have a storage tank. Then you'd have to have some kind of tank to move it from one place to another.
Yeah.
For the person just getting started, buckets are by far and away the best.
It can either be metal or plastic.
Yeah,
or
and there are plastic bags that you can use, or there are plastic buckets. Definitely have to have lids on them and keep them clean.
Yeah, if you're tapping other people's trees, they're most likely, I find, people love the metal buckets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, again, it's that classic,
classic
thing. You know, you're carrying on the tradition.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. The cheapest way to get into it, though, is to use either a recycled or you can get a new one, but a 5-gallon bucket, food grade, and one with a top on it. You can drill a 5/16 hole in the lid, and then either find some recycled tubing from a sugar maple getting rid of his old drops, or just buy some tubing and make your own, and just run the drop straight into the top of the 5-gallon bucket. And it doesn't look the same, but that's definitely the cheapest way to get into the tapping trees, I think. Unless they're bags that are cheaper. I've never used those.
Yeah, I bet with a pail from Home Depot that's food grade or Tractor Supply, and a tap and a piece of drop that's given to you from someone else that's changed pipeline out, you could have a tap on a tree for $5. Where if you buy a bucket and a lid and a spile, just the spile alone is $2.75. The bucket could be as high as $8, $10. Yeah.
Not unless you're making your own taps. You could do that too.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be the cheapest.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's that person that has all the time in the world.
Well, that, I mean, the problem with, I've made my own taps with staghorn sumac and straight maple. You know, then there's size. You know, and the nice thing about these, some of these taps is they're 5/16 and now 3/16 inch size. The smaller the size, less wounding. You know, I don't know how much we're going to talk about tapping, but that matters.
Yeah.
And how many?
It also,
and then where to tap the next year on the tree.
Yield is virtually the same that I've experienced between a 7/16 and a 5/16.
Yeah.
I have just as good quantity runs as with them, with smaller ones, as I did with the bigger ones.
So. Yeah, you would know. I only tapped the 7/16 for a couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, I used them for a long time, and they were basically the same. You didn't lose any volume. 3/16, I don't know anything about. I'll know more this year. My son-in-law is tapping 3/16 pipeline.
Really?
Yeah, he's got a friend who built him a little vacuum system, and he's going to put 100 taps out in his backyard, and it's basically flat, but he's got lines for the vacuum, he's got lines for the sap, and we'll see how it makes out.
Yeah. You're just tuning in. You're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is backyard maple sugaring with Mike Porter.
I used to spend the nights out in a bar room. Liquor was the only love I'd known. You rescued me from reaching for the bottle, and you brought me back from being too far gone. You're as smooth as Tennessee whiskey. You're as sweet as strawberry wine. As a glass of brandy, I stay stoned on your love all the time. I look for love in all the same old places. Found the bottom of a bottle is always dry. When you poured out your heart, I didn't waste it. 'Cause there's nothing like your love to get me high. You're as smooth as Tennessee whiskey. You're as sweet as strawberry wine. And you're as warm as a glass of brandy. I stay stoned on your love all the time. I stay stoned. Time.
All right, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is backyard maple sugaring with President Michael Porter. He's the president of the Catskill Forest Association. So we picked out some sugar maple trees, which is kind of difficult to decipher from a red maple tree, but we're going to have to do that in person. That's difficult to describe. They have brown buds, not red buds, right?
Yep. Smaller buds.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's a little difficult.
The bark hinges like a door. I find sugar maple usually has these white spots on them, whitish bark. Red maple has more like bark that is flaky or exfoliates usually. It can be smooth if it's growing fast, look like a beech tree. Big red buds, big red flowers in the spring.
And serrated edge leaves.
Serrated edge leaves can grow in wet sites or dry sites, red maple. Sugar maple, not so much. Very finicky, likes only well-drained soils for the most part.
I've lost some sugar maples at our place in Andes. They've just drowned.
Yeah.
Because the groundwater's been high for so long.
Yeah.
One of them was a really nice tree that was our only shade in front of the cabin, and it's now firewood and logs. Yeah.
Poorly drained soils will shorten the life of a tree or make it grow very slowly. Okay, we got the trees. We talked a little bit about tapping. A lot to cover, but how about sapwood?
Burning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really important.
It is. And I went through the gamut of firewood. I started out with slab wood because I could get it. There was sawmills around. You can go get a load of slab wood. A lot of times it was hardwood, sometimes it was pine, sometimes it was hemlock. But in a little tiny firebox, slab wood has to be split because it's too flat to keep burning. So there's another level of work. I evolved into, I tried some ash and it made too many coals, and I found you do not want coals in your firebox. You want the fire to burn the wood up completely and have the coals fall through so you constantly have that big flame.
Hot and fast.
Yeah, hot and fast. It used to be that if we didn't have fire coming out the top of the chimney, we didn't have a hot enough fire.
Right.
That was the kind of the gauge we used when we were outdoors.
Yeah.
My personal favorite is quaking aspen. You can get that from about anywhere around here. It grows fast. People don't want it. If they cut it along the side of the road, it's for years to take. And I can cut it in October, split it, stack it, cover it, and it's ready in February.
And, man, does it lose moisture, Mike, because it is very, very wet and heavy.
Oh, yeah. You split it, if you use a hand maul, you get wet because it squirts at you if it's still wet.
Yeah.
But it dries quick, though.
Every tree, when you season it or dry it, loses moisture. That's what seasoning is. And when I looked it up from the Forest Service, I think aspen was one of the top trees to lose the most moisture or benefit from seasoning.
I bet. Yeah. It gets super light.
Yeah. And ash was like the least.
Yeah.
It lost the least amount.
And because it has the least to begin with,
right?
I guess. Yeah. But I like aspen. I know Ryan uses white pine, but we don't have enough white pine here to warrant using it. Steve Miller used some hemlock, and he had good luck with hemlock.
I like hemlock.
Yeah, I've never burned hemlock.
White pine's gasoline.
Yeah,
if you mix it in with others like aspen, it's awesome.
It's like a matchlight.
It's amazing. Yeah. Guy from New Hampshire told me that. The guy I bought my evaporator from, he's like, you got to use white pine.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, I don't have any because I was living in Margaretville at the time. But when I moved to where I'm at, it's the same thing as aspen. People are trying to get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know. And it lasts on the side of the road a long time. That's the one nice thing about white pine is you can come back years later and cut it up and still use it.
Aspen gets punky real quick.
Yeah.
It rots.
I cut down a white cedar. I'm going to burn that this year.
Are you?
Yeah. And it looks like it's going to be good because it's very light. You know, it has that light feeling when you pick it up. So, what are you using, John?
I've got... recommendation from you. I've got about 2/3 white pine, and then the other third is split evenly between hemlock and aspen.
I think that all three of those are great.
Yeah, so I'm going to blend them together. They're in separate piles, so I can do a nice even mixture, and it should be good.
Yeah, Steve got me on the hemlock, and I think it's really good.
You know, an interesting thing, you talk to small backyard people like us, and we do an awful lot of experimentation. Like Ryan checks trees individually to see how much sugar's in them. We try different woods, like John's going to try three different woods, and he'll be able to tell what's up with it because he knows his boiling rate. We each have our own little science thing that we try. And I've tried to make my operation as hands-free as possible by using tanks and pipe delivery systems and all of that. And I've actually gone backwards. I stopped the tank thing because it's hard to keep it clean. But I do still have a delivery system that has a little bit of a pre-warmer phase to it. I stick with one wood. I don't generally mess with much else. But you talk to people that are small operators, one of their big goals is to make syrup faster. Because if you have a 2x2 pan, you're making a gallon of syrup in 10 hours. And you're still burning a whole pile of wood. Yeah. It's just that it's going up the chimney more. Where with mine, with a 2x4 or your 2x3, you're getting down to 8 or 9 gallons of liquid boiled off an hour. I can do about 13 if I keep it really stoked.
Yeah, I'm 5 to 8.
Yeah, and the minute somebody runs my evaporator that doesn't pay attention to the fire, it goes down dramatically.
Right.
You know, and you have to be right on top of it and go for it.
It's fun. Yeah, I don't want to get bigger with maple syrup. I like the simplicity of how I do it. There's no really moving parts. I just write it off as a workout. You know, lifting the buckets, it's about 5 to 6 gallons each time you lift it. That's a clean. My shoulders get strong. Hopefully I don't wear them out, but every time I lift up a bucket, that's another pint. That's the way I look at it. It's a pint of syrup in there. And every hour is another pint.
Yeah.
So pint, 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 pint.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's you learn an awful lot about your area, too, by what trees are better. Like, you can buy a refractometer for $20 that'll tell you the sugar content of your sap from one drop.
Yeah.
And you'd go out and you test your trees, and if you have one that's not doing much and you find that out 2 or 3 years in a row, you don't tap it. If you find, like, the one that was 4%, that was the first year I tapped that tree, and I tested it like 5 times. I said, this can't be right.
Yeah.
4% is like a super tree. And it's just a tree. It was actually a nursery tree that the village planted in her front yard.
You know, if it's in the open, I never make assumptions because sometimes the open tree will fool me and it'll be lower, but you almost all the time it's higher. But, you know, I was tapping trees in Dunraven years ago, and an older guy came up to me and goes, you know, they're not as sweet as they used to be. Well, I don't think he's wrong, but I don't think he's totally right. I think he thinks they're not as sweet because of something that changed in the environment. I think it's cultural reasons. You've been on these 19th century farmhouses, and they always have like a sugar bush above them.
Yeah.
And back in the 1800s, they had sugar bushes that they would manage. And a lot of these are still there to this day. Now they're kind of crowded in by pole-sized maple trees. And they managed them so that they had big crowns and spacing. And I think that's why they were sweeter.
Yeah. You look at the old sugar bushes, and the trees were not jammed together. You didn't have one every 10 feet or 12 feet. You might have had 60 or 70 feet between them. But you also had to get your horse and sled through there, so you needed the room.
Right.
They were still doing buckets back then. So they had really nice trees.
Really nice trees. So 2.5-3% isn't uncommon.
No.
At that point. You can also tell, you can learn a lot about trees when you're doing buckets and stuff, because there was my best tree. It was always 3% at this guy's house, right in front of his house. And he blacktopped his driveway, right? You know, I don't blame him. It's his driveway. I didn't think it would affect it that much. Well, it did. After that next winter, I tapped it and nothing.
Yeah.
I won't take another chance and tap it again. But the roots have got to be compromised.
Yeah. Across the street from our house, the church parking lot had 4 trees around it. And there was one tree right on the edge of the bank between the parking lot and the street that I used to tap multiple taps on a tree too, which I've changed. I go back to only the very big trees do I do even two taps.
Yeah.
But I have three buckets on there, and I would fill three buckets a day from that tree. Then Head Start came into the church basement, and the village ran through the parking lot every time they salted and salted the parking lot. And in a matter of 2 years, that tree was gone.
Yeah, they're very finicky. They're
finicky
roots.
To salt. So, I mean, it can happen quickly.
If I had one thing of advice, one tapper tree is one of the best things I've started doing. If you're a backyarder, chances are you're going to have more trees than you can tap.
Yeah.
So if you can do one tap, and I have records of this now for about 15, almost 15 years now, and when I used to tap 2, 3, 4, you know, I'd get your typical quart of syrup throughout the season per tap. Now that I've gone to one tap, I think I could have gotten a gallon last year per tap. For one, I think I made three quarts per tap.
But you're also selecting what trees you tap.
Absolutely, but I never do more than one now. And my sap is crazy, the amount of sap. So I thought it was just whatever. And Cornell did a study in the 50s comparing sugar bushes where they did one tap per tree, comparing it to 2 and 3. And they realize that you're getting so much less sap out of the second tap. You're getting 25 to 50 or 75%.
Wow, okay.
So you actually do get less sap. Now, you're going to have more sap.
Yeah.
But if you just do one, you're getting the full power, for lack of a better way of saying it, per tap of the sap, which makes kind of sense.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, but
it's got so much pressure to push it out.
Yeah.
And if it's three holes, it's going to go quicker and
yeah.
maybe be a little less volume.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think, John?
No, I agree with you. On the backyard scale, it's definitely the way to go. You know, where it comes from, you know, the second tap, or I haven't seen a tree, you know, capable of three taps in quite a while that in the wood setting, but it comes from these commercial guys, right?
Yeah.
They're running the tubing. They've already got the cost. Their cost is fixed to run that tubing to the tree. So to put a second drop on it, which might be maybe another dollar or less per season, depending on what, you know,
yeah.
tubing they're using. It could be as low as 15 to 30 cents per season per tap for that second one. It
yep.
does financially pay for them.
Oh, totally.
And it'll help amortize the cost of the tubing. So that's where it makes sense. But like you say, on the backyard scale, when, you know, you might have finite resources, maybe you only have 10 buckets to work with, then spread them out. Put them on 10 trees. You get to test yeah. 10 more trees and decide whether or not they're the 10 trees for you to tap next year.
It's kind of like comparing on an apple tree. Now I'm thinking about apples. You would never, on a backyard scale, it makes sense still, I think, for the homeowner to plant a standard tree that grows, you know, up to 20 feet as long as you prune it and don't let it get there, because it grows faster, it's hardier to the soil, mm-hmm. hardier to lower temperatures, hardier to insects and disease, I think. Whereas the commercial guys are doing on a trellis, 3-foot spacing, but they have everything perfect. But constantly we emulate the commercial scale. They're different things,
yeah.
I think, you know? Like, it doesn't make sense for commercial guys to thin their sugar bushes like they did in the 19th century because they had the reverse osmosis.
Yeah.
Why would they do that? They're going to put it through the sap through reverse osmosis. Why thin out the sugar bush and spend $150 to $300 per acre to thin it out when you can buy a $15,000 machine or whatever and just run the sap through it at 1.5%, you know, 50 to 1, and make it now 8 to 1.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then they're using oil.
Yeah.
Which, they have boiling almost instantly.
Now it's 1 to 1 efficiency now, I'm hearing,
yeah.
or less.
Or better, yeah.
That's crazy.
I'll give you an example. Jody, who's my friend, he's done syrup several years on a big scale, and he started with a 2x8 oil-fired evaporator with no RO. And he was doing a gallon of syrup to a gallon of oil.
Wow.
And he was okay with that because he was getting, you know, what, $40, $50 for a gallon of syrup and spending $3 a gallon for oil.
Right.
He got thinking about what he would do if he had an RO, and he's now down to like 5 gallons of syrup to 1 gallon of oil
right.
by using the RO.
So it makes sense.
It, on a scale of economics, it's way better
mm-hmm.
To yeah. go with the RO.
Right.
And, the oil is, I just have a problem using oil
yeah.
personally.
Well, and if you're a backyarder who does firewood, go cut around your nice sugar maple trees to emulate that 19th century thing, yeah. Right? Now you have higher sugar contents. But yeah, on a commercial scale, thinning out a sugar maple trees, that's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. And you got to get them on the ground, so you got to know what you're doing with a chainsaw, and you got to have a lot of ability because you're going to get the wood out and use it for something, so you got to have a truck or a tractor or something.
Yeah.
It becomes it's like that song, the cost of firewood, you know. Remember yeah. that song with guy has to have a truck and a chainsaw?
Oh, yeah.
Tractor,
yeah.
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 Also, the reason why exactly. it doesn't happen in a commercial setting much is the tubing's already up, typically. You know, it has to be done before the tubing's installed.
Right.
Because you can't cut trees. You can't remove that tubing. It doesn't go down easily. And the damage that could happen from trees falling on it is going to – the labor cost to fix it is way too high. It's not going to pay for it.
So we got the trees. You got to have dry wood, which yep. it's not called firewood. It's sapwood. Light wooded trees that burn hot and fast. So we got about 6 minutes left. What about boiling stuff? What do you recommend for someone getting into that?
I really would prefer somebody to use a flat pan as opposed to a pot. Flat pan, by its design, gives you more surface area, even in a small scale, than a flat pot. If you're lucky enough to have like an oil barrel that you have the skill to convert it to a boiler. I did that. I had a 200-gallon oil tank, and I actually found, scrounging through my father-in-law's, three pans that we put on there, and we made a glorified evaporator. One pan was a pre-warmer, so the sap was going into the back pan.
That's really important.
That is. Get it warm so you're not spending time in your boiling pan heating it up.
I learned that right away. I remember when we first started doing it, we were ladling
yeah.
cold sap into there. I was like,
yeah.
What the hell?
But you can get as clever as you can by just finding these pans that fit. Yeah. And I had a three-pan system. I used it for years. And when I was just using one pan on the blocks in the garden, I couldn't lift it. When it was time to get it off, if I didn't have somebody there to help me pick it up and pour the syrup out, I'd burn it. With my new thing, I'd end it into a smaller pan. I could take off by myself.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's really important that you take that into consideration. Because if you can't handle your syrup pan, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably good to talk to someone who's done it before. You know, before I met Mike, I got into it by reading a book, which I really recommend because it's written very simply. There's a guy in New Hampshire named Rink Mann called Backyard Sugaring. It's a simple book. It's not too long. He writes very concisely, and that's what I would recommend.
Yeah, and to me, if you're going to boil, you have to think about the time you have. And don't go over your head in terms of time. If you can only boil weekends, you have to rethink the whole thing because sometimes you can't store sap for that long. It'll either freeze solid or it'll spoil. You have to dump some during the week or find someone else to take it during the week if you want to just be a weekend warrior.
Yeah.
If you have an urge to boil, find out what your pan will do and try not to get more sap than you can handle in a day.
So, for example, mine is a 2x3 pan. It does about 5 to 8 gallons per hour, right? How do you know what to tap or whatever? What I think is if you have big maple trees, and I pretty much use the calculation of 2 gallons of sap per tap. So if it's 15 taps, I have to be able to boil down 30 gallons
today
in a night.
Because tomorrow,
right.
you're going to have it again.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part for some people. They get overwhelmed. They get discouraged because they're spoiling. They have sap spoiling, and they're not making good syrup for whatever reason.
Well, it's easy to tap them.
Yeah, it is. compared to the sitting around boiling, it's real easy to throw a bunch of taps in.
I don't know much about dairy farming, but to me it's not too much different in some ways. I have to visit those trees every day to make sure. Even if they ran a little bit, I want to dump out that sap,
right.
keep that bucket fresh. So every day I got to visit those trees once I tap them.
Yeah. And John and I gathered for you one year when you were when you had
appendicitis.
Appendicitis, yeah, right in the middle of maple season. How dare
my God.
Him? And we went down. We had to drive how far? About 20 miles to get all his sap?
36 miles, Mike.
No, no.
Oh.
Just between trees.
No, come on. It's 2 miles.
It was a few miles, but still.
A mile and a half.
It still was time.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
The sap was wonderful because we took it home and boiled it because you couldn't.
The sap is, it's crazy. Those trees are nuts, especially the ones on the uphill.
Yeah.
They're nuts.
But anyway, yeah, it's. You just have to think about what you can invest in the season.
Yeah. That's my maple run. That's what I call it. It's a circle.
If you want to go a little bigger, you want to really go at it on the weekend, find someone to take your sap for the week. You know, there's always somebody that'll take it. I've given sap away. Steve Miller's given sap away to me when I was running short and he had some. You know, you find somebody, ask them, do you want my sap? And
you can take the ice out.
Yeah, you take the ice out. That reduces the water content.
Oh, yeah.
Unless they're really finicky about making really light syrup, they might not want your sap. They'll say, what kind of syrup are you making? You say, I'm making dark syrup. I don't want it because I don't want a dark syrup. I don't want to darken my supply up. I've had that happen.
Or oh, yeah.
Tried to give mine away and said, oh, what kind of syrup are you making? I said, maple.
Maple, yeah.
What color? Dark.
Dark. I just like, I don't get into this whole color scheme thing. Amber. As long as it's amber, it's good to go. Yeah. Filtered. It's all filtered and you know, free of sugar sand. But amber is good.
Yep. And whatever color amber it is.
That's right.
Medium, light, dark.
Rosette.
Yeah. The rosé. We had a friend who used to say, oh, mine's a nice rosé color.
Yeah.
Wine.
That's good.
That was dark.
That's all the time we have, believe it or not. It is over. If you're just tuning in, this is From the Forest. Tonight's topic was backyard maple sugaring with Mike Porter. That's all I got.
Yeah, thanks. And if you have questions, you can contact me through CFA, and I have some equipment that I help people get started with. I loaned out a pan last year, and I feel very strongly about helping people try it.
Yeah, that's
one
awesome.
One thing I want to mention before we sign off is on February 27th, Catskill Forest Association is hosting a backyard maple sugaring workshop at Mike Porter's backyard. So if you want to meet Mike, see his operation he talked about tonight, and learn firsthand how to do it in the backyard scale, we'll be talking about it there on February 27th. You can sign up through CFA's website, catskillforest.org.
All right. This Saturday's apple tree pruning demonstration as well. You can look that up at the same place. All right, take care.
Thanks for having me.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
From the forest, up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.